For 82556, Uber Tech versus Royce. Counsel, ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, did you want to reserve time?
Your Honor, I'd like to also reserve 4 minutes. May it please the court, Lee Roberts appearing for the appellants, Uber Technologies, Razor LLC, and Razor-CA LLC. I'm going to deviate from my planned presentation and start out by addressing some of the questions asked by the court in the companion case, because I do believe the issues, while not identical, are similar enough to justify me giving my own response to those answers. And one of the questions asked by the court was, what about the remand? Why did they remand it rather than simply finding that the disputes were the dispute to arbitrability had been delegated to the arbitrators? And although it's recited that the parties did adopt the AAA rules, if the court will refer to the actual district court decision, which started this whole process, found at 2016 Westlaw 715-7421, the court specifically found that the present action falls within the terms of an express carve-out, and the carve-out they're referring to is the injunctive relief, and then went on, quote, indeed, it would be senseless to have the AAA rules apply to proceedings that are not subject to arbitration. As such, there is no reason to believe that incorporation of the AAA rules, including the AAA rule that delegates the question of arbitrability to the arbitrator, should indicate a clear and unmistakable intention that the parties agreed to arbitrate the question of arbitrability. So what we're dealing with here was a little bit of a circular reasoning by the court. The court found that the dispute was not within the scope of the arbitration agreement, and therefore the AAA rules, which were part of the arbitration agreement, did not apply. And since the district court had never reached the merits of the AAA rules and whether they clearly delegated arbitrability to the arbitrator, it was proper to send this back for a remand to decide that issue.
Mr. Roberts, let me ask you, the arbitration agreement in the Uber, the Uber arbitration agreement is different than the Airbnb arbitration agreement, it would seem. Well, my question would be, in the Uber agreement, it says you're required to resolve any claim that you may have against Uber. So there's broader language about that. Is that a distinction without a difference? Or is your arbitration clause different in a meaningful way?
Your Honor, I agree with Airbnb's argument that it falls within Henry Schein. But yes, even if the court found that under their particular arbitration agreement, it was not broad enough to have Henry Schein apply under the Moritz case or some other decision from California, our agreement is broader and starts out with that general principle that you, in boldface, that you agree to arbitrate any and all claims with Uber. And then it gets into the terms and conditions later, but that introductory paragraph, I believe, is certainly broad enough that the court can find that motor vehicle accidents, such as the type at issue here, were within the contemplation of the parties when they signed that agreement or when they entered into that agreement by proposing it and clicking on it using the services.
Factually, there were at least one of the plaintiffs was using the services during the interaction, or both were using the services during the incident, as opposed necessarily to somebody who was walking down the street not using the services and was injured.
Yes. Once again, I agree, Your Honor. We would contend that they were both using the services in a broad point. Certainly the services are not the transportation itself, but the fact that both individuals got into the Uber after it was called indicates to us that they were both using the services to connect with the rider, with the driver who was transporting them. And therefore, we would contend that these disputes are certainly within the scope of the very broad arbitration clause at issue. But we also contend it was improper for Judge Williams to reach that issue based on Henry Schein. The
even under Henry Schein, who decides if there was ever an agreement made to arbitrate? Because isn't that kind of the point? Did they clearly and unmistakably agree to delegate all this issue to have the arbitration clause? Can we say in this context or in the former context that they did? Is that to the courts or is that to the arbitrator, whether there's a contract, an agreement to do that?
I would agree that this is for the court up until you said in this context. I think that the best policy and the best way to deal with this issue in light of Henry Schein is to have the court only consider, is there a valid agreement to arbitrate entered into between the parties? And does one of the parties contend this dispute is within that arbitration agreement? Once you reach that threshold, then under the delegation clause, at least as applicable in our case, that question goes to the arbitrator, and it was improper for the court to reach it. And I know from some of the questions that there's this question about, well, is it really fair? Is it really reasonable? Did the courts really intend to arbitrate this type of dispute when they agreed to arbitrate with Uber for rideshare services? And this is where I think it's instructive to look a little bit deeper at the Henry Schein dispute. And in order to do that, I would suggest going to the Fifth Circuit case that was ultimately vacated and remanded, which is found at 878 F3rd 488. And they explain further that the arbitration clause in Henry Schein was found in the dealer agreement between Pelton and Crane and Archer and White Sales. Pelton and Crane was one of the manufacturers. Archer and White was a distributor. Henry Schein was actually a competing distributor. And the allegations in Schein was that the manufacturer that Archer and White had an arbitration agreement with in its distribution agreement had conspired, Schein and the manufacturer conspired to do things which violated the federal antitrust law. And they'd attempted to limit territory and conspired to hurt Archer and White. So when you think about what the court decided here with wholly groundless, is it really any different than, wait a minute, this is a motor vehicle accident. Maybe that's not what they intended when they said they'd agreed to arbitrate any and all claims. Because an antitrust action certainly is not a contract claim. It's not something dealing with the terms of pricing for the ride the way Judge Williams wanted to limit it in this case. And what the court found is that once you decide that the issues of arbitrability go to the arbitrator, then it doesn't matter if the court thinks, wait a minute, this isn't the kind of claim that's within the scope of the arbitration agreement. Because that's what wholly groundless is. And I know there's some question about what did the court really mean by wholly groundless? And once again, wholly groundless was defined, at least in the context of Schein, by the Fifth Circuit at page 495, 878 F3rd 495. An assertion of arbitrability is not wholly groundless if there is a legitimate argument that the arbitration clause covers the present dispute, and on the other hand, that it does not. If the court can find a plausible argument that the arbitration agreement requires the merits of the claim to be arbitrated, the wholly groundless exception will not apply. Well, with all due respect to Mr. Henryhod, I think that's exactly what the court is saying wholly groundless is, that someone is unable to articulate even a plausible argument that the arbitration agreement requires the merits of the claim to be arbitrated. That's frivolous. That's absurd. That's wholly groundless. And the point here is that it is the arbitrator that determines whether it's wholly groundless. The arbitrator determines the assertion that you're not required to arbitrate this type of dispute. So,
Mr. Roberts, I'll ask you, as I asked counsel on the prior case, is there anything in the record, or are you aware of anything we could look to about what has been happening in these situations? Are arbitrators ever saying, yeah, you're right, it's not within the scope of the arbitration agreement, go back to court?
And I don't have that, and I don't believe that it's in the arbitration agreement. But I think that if the court were to decide this based on the fear that an arbitrator would not correctly rule on that issue, that gets into the exact type of thing which the FAA was designed to prevent. This fear that an arbitrator, a California attorney, is not going to adequately protect the rights of the parties, is going to keep jurisdiction of a case he shouldn't. That's not an appropriate grounds for refusing to enforce the arbitration agreement. And in this case, it's a retired judge. Excuse me.
Counsel, I'm sorry. I have the mask on. Sorry. Is it really about what a consumer has contracted for? What a consumer who goes online to an adhesion contract to use an app, what did they anticipate? What were they deciding to arbitrate? What did they agree to do? And that's kind of my question here. Are we to read Schein that if there's any arbitration provision, even if the arbitration provision and delegation clause by its own terms is limiting, where it says arising out of or it has particular language that limits it, the position I'm hearing is there's just no role for the courts. If it's stuck in there and you have accepted it at some point, you're stuck with it. And I'm not casting aspersions on arbitrators. I'm just talking about from a consumer perspective. We're to say the courts don't have a role in saying what you contracted for as a matter of state law.
And if there's no question the consumer consented to the agreement by clicking on the consent and using the services, then I think the courts don't have a role if it's been clearly delegated. And what would a reasonable consumer think when they read this in boldface? By agreeing to the terms, you agree you're required to resolve any claim that you may have against Uber on an individual basis in arbitration. And an individual basis is defined later to distinguish individual basis versus class action.
And again, that language, but even in that context, you're saying, do the courts have the ability to look at that language? That's broad language. In other contexts, it's narrower language. My question is, do the courts have any role to look at what you contracted for?
Not the way this contract is written. Unlike the Airbnb contract, ours is not circular. The delegation clause doesn't reference the terms and vice versa. They're independent. The Supreme Court has said that the arbitrability clause, the delegation to the arbitrator of arbitrability, should be looked at severally as a separate contract. And therefore, we don't believe it's appropriate to look at the terms and have the court try to discern the scope of the terms when deciding whether to enforce the delegation clause. And we also don't agree that it's unconscionable or a contract of adhesion, because unlike the California cases that our opponents cite, dealing in the context of employment, where it's agree and have a job, disagree and don't have a job. Here, you don't have to click the services. We don't have you over a barrel. You can call Lyft. If Lyft has a similar provision, you can call a cab. You can get anywhere you want to go in Las Vegas in a cab, and there is no clicking. There is no arbitration clause. Of course, if you click a cab, the statutory minimum is $500,000. Under the TNC statute, we give you $1.5 million. So I think it's not a bad deal for a consumer, and if they choose to opt into it, I'm going to take a little time from my rebuttal just to briefly address two issues, even if that gets me out of luck. First of all, the policy reason, here's what Henry Schein said. Archer and White assume it's easy to tell. When an argument for arbitrability of a particular dispute is wholly groundless, we're dubious. The exception would inevitably spark collateral litigation over whether a seemingly unmeritorious argument for arbitration is wholly groundless or not. And if you look at it as the court reaching the merits of the dispute, that's what we're getting into. And guess what? Every time one of these judges gets into the merits and rules on the scope of the arbitration agreement, we have a right of immediate appeal, and that's going to be a business this court is in. Section 10 of the FAA gives you the right to vacate an award if the arbitrator exceeds his jurisdiction, just like you don't have a right to an intermediate writ because you can protect someone at the end. Section 10 allows the courts to protect someone at the end if they found an arbitrator exceeded his power. Justice Herndon?
Yes, sir.
How do you get out of any contract you agree to and don't like?
You knew I would ask you that at some point. You established that apparently it doesn't happen by deleting the app.
We think if you send a letter revoking the agreement and never use the services again, arguably you'd be out of it, but I don't think that's developed.
But who decides?
Pardon?
Who decides whether that was effective?
Initially, I imagine the arbitrator.
Thank you.
He's got 5 seconds.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Kevin Ruff. For plaintiffs, along with me is my co-counsel, Trevor Quirk, and my colleague, Natalie Pang. I'd also like to note that we have three of our sons in the back here, and I truly believe that, you know, for them to be able to see a state Supreme Court engaging really important issues like this, it's just as good as it gets. And I'm proud to be here. And I'd like to begin, actually, sort of where counsel left off, and talking a little bit about, well, how do you end this contract? Specific to this contract, actually, it's quite easy to end it. And the contract itself, at paragraph 1, has the following terms. By accessing or using the services, you confirm your agreement to be bound by these terms. If you do not agree to these terms, you may not access or use the services. I would present that the reasonable interpretation of that contractual term is that a user of Uber, if they choose to use the services, is bound by a contract associated with the particular use of services, the particular calling of a car in that instance. And if thereafter they decide they don't want to do business with Uber anymore, or if they decide maybe they heard something about this arbitration provision and they don't like it, then they get to not use the services. The contract itself, which counsel has suggested sort of immediately comes into effect as soon as you sign up for an account, doesn't. The contract says, at the time you signed up for the contract, or I'm sorry, for the account, the question of whether you agree to these terms is for the future. In the future, if you use these services, you will have agreed to these terms. In the future, if you choose not to use these services, you will not be agreeing to these terms. That's a perfectly plausible and, frankly, very reasonable interpretation of this kind of agreement. I'll submit that, you know, it's been mentioned, but clearly, you know, Lyft was just mentioned. In fact, counsel literally just interpreted the contract the way I do. He said if they don't like the terms, if they don't like arbitration, they can call Lyft. Exactly. It makes no sense to pretend, especially in the era in which we live, where all of us have, I've got how many apps on my phone? I'm sure some of you have apps on your phone. I'm sure we all recognize, and I'm not disputing, that there's tons of case law about how consumers agree to certain things, but we all know that we're not really agreeing to those things. What we're doing is we're, you know, as a cost of doing business, accepting these terms that are increasingly draconian. I will mention, I argued in the California Supreme Court the Dynamics case. That dealt with independent contracting, and that gave rise to some big changes in California law. And this whole area that you're dealing with right now is could not be more important to the consumers of the different states.
Counsel?
Yeah.
Sorry if I can interrupt. The provision at issue explicitly says the parties agree that the arbitrator shall have exclusive authority to resolve any disputes relating to the interpretation, applicability, enforcement, or formation of this arbitration agreement. Well, is that what you were just discussing? The application, enforceability, interpretation?
Well, I think
agreement.
There's a distinction between the creation of the contract in the first instance and the subsequent questions. And everyone agrees, and certainly Schein reaffirmed, that the formation question is definitely for the court.
Do you dispute that your client agreed and clicked agreeing to the terms and conditions?
I agree that my client was made aware of terms and conditions that said, if you use the service, then you will agree to these terms.
Okay.
And if you do not agree with these terms, don't use the service.
Okay.
I agree with that.
So then
he entered
an agreement.
Well,
you say those are its terms. Mr. Roberts may disagree about what those terms are and when it applies, but isn't that a decision for the arbitrator?
Well, no, because I certainly understand that this is a nuanced question. In fact, in their brief, you may recall they sort of take two different cases, the Elko case and the Green Sky case. We cited Green Sky, where the court took it upon itself, even with delegation, to determine that a dispute should not be delegated because there was a question of whether a contract was signed. And then the one they like, Elko, was a situation where there was some question of the authority, but we would also mention that the court was also ordering everyone to arbitration on a completely separate ground, which was equitable estoppel. But at any rate, yeah, it's a nuanced question, because if a court has before it the question of formation, and within formation there are, you know, nuanced questions, I would still submit that when it's four square, a question of formation, the court has to deal with it and must deal with it, especially in the consumer context. Because
Let me ask you this. It almost seems as if you're saying that basically if you use an app and you agree to its terms and conditions, that somehow Shine just doesn't apply. The law of it just doesn't apply because it's just this app. Yet across this country, including the Ninth Circuit, and cases across the country involving Uber and this exact issue have gone the other way and followed Shine. How do you reconcile that?
I'm not in any way suggesting you should not follow Shine. I have never seen a case that, and we're talking about November 2016 terms of use, so maybe I don't know if any case has ever dealt with those terms, but as this first point that I'm making is specifically just about these terms of use and specifically about how a consumer enters into or agrees to these terms. And as I say, these terms say you agree through action, that you're not agreeing when you set up the account, you're agreeing in the future by virtue of action that is using.
So what you're saying is essentially a springing agreement. When you choose to use the service, then the terms apply.
I think that's a fair reading of it, and I think that that's a totally reasonable reading of it. Now, you know, of course, Uber may change its terms, and again, you know, as we all recognize, and you know, people will presumably accept whatever they say. They might say these: you are agreeing now, or by clicking on this, or signing, or whatever, that we have these terms. But that's not what this contract says. This contract says you will demonstrate your agreement through use of the service. If you do not agree to these terms, you will not use it.
So, counsel, this is the terms of the document say, by accessing or using the services, you confirm your agreement to be bound by the terms. Seems to apply when you're using the service, something goes awry, you're bound by the contract. So in this instance, somebody used the service. One of the plaintiffs, I'm sorry, I don't know which name.
Ms. Worth used the service.
Okay, Ms. Worth used the service to hail an Uber and use an Uber, got in an Uber, has an Uber account. So by accessing the services, she agreed to be bound by its terms. You have another passenger who has an Uber account but wasn't the person who hailed it, but certainly utilized it. Would that person also be bound because by using the services, you confirm your agreement to be bound by the terms?
Well, I would suggest that the use of the services is a commercial transaction and that you're not using the services by being somebody else's guest, and which is probably a good place for me to pivot to the other issue that I'd like to raise, which is the FAA and Section 2 and the notion that we certainly advocate that in order for Shine to apply, that like the Moritz case said, Shine was taking for granted that the dispute arose out of the contract. And I'd like to suggest, Moritz certainly says that, that what Shine meant, that Shine took for granted that the dispute arose out of the contract. Under the FAA, Section 2, as you know, it states that the written provision in any maritime transaction or a contract evidencing a transaction involving commerce to settle at arbitration a controversy thereafter arising out of such contract. Those words mean that the FAA is applying to commerce, to contracts in commerce. It's not a rule about arbitration untethered from a contract in commerce. Thus, to suggest that it doesn't matter if the dispute in some way, shape, or form arises out of the contract, I think is just inconsistent with the FAA. And certainly I recognize there are cases that disagree with that. But you're the Nevada Supreme Court, and you're going to have a decision about this really important issue. And I really, I think that there are very strong policy reasons and strong logical reasons why it would make sense that the court would decide in the first instance whether a particular dispute arose under the contract. You know, if I had a Venn diagram, I would say, you know, arose under the contract is the big circle. And then the question thereafter for the arbitrator, if there is a valid delegation clause, is it arbitrable? But that first big circle, is this somehow related to the commercial agreement that you know, floated this boat in the first place? That's, to me, that's got to be decided by a court. If there are no questions, I will be happy to sit down.
Colleagues? No questions? Anything further? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Counsel, we appreciate the arguments. You actually have 4 seconds in rebuttal, so that doesn't leave you much. But if you want to exercise your 4 seconds, go ahead.
I think that's just enough time to say, unless the court has any questions, I've got nothing further.
Any questions? All right, counsel, thank you for the excellent arguments and the briefing in the matter. The matter will stand submitted. The court will stand in recess until 11:30.